Welcome back to the Roundtable. This Saturday, December 13th, renowned singer-songwriter Dar Williams will celebrate the 20th anniversary of her debut album, The Honesty Room, at the Calvin Theater in Northampton, Massachusetts. She'll perform present-day takes on the 13 singular songs featured on The Honesty Room, performed in its entirety for the first time ever.
My dad is a miracle and so's my mom.
It's always a treat to welcome Dar Williams to the Roundtable.
Hello.
So what have you been learning as you've toured around your album that is 20 years old as a live concert show?
Well, I learned everything I think I hoped I would learn about myself and being a grown-up, because that album came out when I was around 25, and so that's a lot of my grown-up life with the album. I learned that I can travel pretty well, that I can nap anywhere. And I've learned that, in my opinion at least, that American towns and cities are really going in a good direction.
How did you decide that you would go on this tour, that you would take The Honesty Room and play it through for audiences again?
It was a really cool thing where my management said, let's do a few shows just in places like Boston, New York, you know, where my career really started to happen, to sort of honor The Honesty Room. And so I put out a little blurb saying, guess what? The Honesty Room is going to be 20 years old, and here are some things that were going on when I first made the album, because it really was a very fun, you know, young person's adventure off in the woods with a bunch of young people engineering and, you know, playing. And like 60,000 people saw it, you know, on Facebook. You know, you can track all this stuff.
Right.
And I don't even have that many followers. And then we had all these great, you know, friendly people in my office who kept on kind of pushing it on Facebook, being like, when did you hear your first song? And, you know, have you covered one? What's your favorite one? And I was like, leave them alone. But people, they kept on responding. It was really, it was lovely. And it was kind of a memory lane moment for me. I mean, I thought, oh, gosh, I would love to do more than a few concerts. And my manager said, how about doing more than a few concerts? So then, and then we taped it to make a live album of it, which is great for me because, you know, I have a completely different voice than I did 20 years ago. So it's fun for me to get these old songs with, you know, the mature voice that I have now.
Where did you tape the live version?
It was a hybrid.
Okay.
Keswick in Philly and City Winery in New York City.
When you do that, when you put out a live record like you have done with this one, who decides which tracks from which place that you taped will go on the album? Do you listen to them and say, well, I did my best work on that song this place?
I have been the one who's done that in the past, and I get sort of crippled by it.
Mm-hmm.
I just seize up. So I said to my managers, could you do this? I mean, I obviously know them and trust them. And can you pull out, you know, what you think? And then, you know, they chose the stories, too. And they said, you know, there's one. It's a funny story, but it's not very nice. It's about your record company. I don't know. I don't think we should do that one. And I said, oh, gosh. I try not to, you know, I think I'm a nice person. So, you know, they weeded out things that were perhaps inappropriate and then found what they thought were the best things and then sent them my way. And luckily, one night I was in a really massive traffic jam, and so I just sat there and listened to it and made notes. But I'm really grateful to the people I work with because they said, you know what, it's a fun show. It doesn't have to be perfect.
Mm-hmm.
So we weren't really looking for that to begin with.
Can you tell when you start playing it if the audience has a favorite song? Is there a huge reaction when they get what they want?
Yeah, there's definitely that. But, you know, and that's great, but in folk music, there's always like a few new people coming along.
Mm-hmm.
And in a funny way, your antenna is always out in that direction. Like, I feel like I can always hear the person who hasn't heard it before, but it's a lot of fun to look down and see people singing along, or, you know, like when I toured with Joan Baez, there are all these people in the front row, and those are the expensive seats, so those are the people who, you know, they had sort of like these wealthy spouses next to them who didn't necessarily want to be at the show. But by the time Joan came on stage and sang her first song, it was like you watched the whole first row turn into a bunch of 17-year-olds with, you know, long hair and beads. So, you know, to see people remembering and to kind of make those connections, you could see that too, and I love that.
Do you have personal favorites from the album, songs that you did keep playing over the years?
Yeah, well, the two songs sort of written from a child's point of view or a child's perspective, the song When I Was a Boy and The Babysitter's Here.
Tonight was just great. She taught us the sign for peace. Now she's made us some popcorn. We've turned out the lights and we're watching movies. Don't understand, and she tries to explain how a spaceship is riding through somebody's brain, and there's blood and guts and she's the best one that we've ever had. She sits on her hair and she's tall as my dad, and she tie-dyed my shirt and she pierced her own ear, and it's peace may who yeah the babysitter.
Both found their way into almost every concert. I alternate usually, but
mm-hmm.
And the song You're Aging Well, because I did that with Joan, and that was, she did, you know, she introduced a lot of my world to me, audience wise. So I find myself still singing that one. And then other stuff kind of comes up as B-side requests from time to time.
Why is it that as we grow older and stronger, road signs point us adrift and make us afraid, saying you never can win. Watch your back, where's your husband? I don't like the signs that the sign makers made. So I'm gonna steal out with my paint, my brushes. I'll change the directions, I'll hit every street. It's the Tinseltown scandal, the Robin Hood vandal. She goes out and steals the king's. In the morning you wake up and the signs point to you. They say, I'm so glad that you finally made it here. You thought nobody cared, but I did, I could tell. And this is your year, and it always starts here. And oh, 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 you're aging well. I know a woman with a collection of sticks. She could fight back the hundreds of voices she heard. She could poke at the greed. She could fend off her need. And with anger she found she could pound every word. But one voice got through and caught her up by surprise. It said, don't hold us back. We're the story you'll tell. And no sooner than spoken, a spell had been broken, and the voices before were trumpets and timpani, violins, basses, and woodwinds and cellos singing. We're so glad that you finally made it here. You thought nobody cared, but we did, we could tell. And now you'll dance through the days while the orchestra plays the notes.
I was thinking about how framing this, it's sort of funny that you have a song on your first album called You're Aging Well that you're now revisiting.
Yeah.
As you are aging well.
It is really, it's really interesting to sing that song now because I was, it was good. It was good. I was 27. No, I was 25 when I wrote it, and I had a 27-year-old boyfriend who dumped me for a 20-year-old. And it's funny because I chose to put that in a parallel to, there were a lot of stories in the 90s about people in their 40s, women in their 40s whose husbands had midlife crises and left them for, you know, younger women in smaller cars. Like, that was kind of a cliche at the time. And that's right. Really changed, I think.
I think so, too.
But I kind of put myself in the same boat as those women and saw a lot of the same weird themes coming up, like people saying inappropriate things. Like, this guy said, I'm about to turn 30. If a 20-year-old would go out with me, I would dump my girlfriend in a second. And I was like, you have no soul. How about that? And so, you know, I suddenly, and a friend of mine also said, you know what, if I had some guy who actually wanted to leave me for a younger woman in a smaller car, I probably would be like, why do we cast that woman as unhappy? Like, I'd probably be relieved to get rid of someone like that. And so it was really great to put myself in this sort of big pool of, you know, people aging and aging proudly. and it stuck, you know? And so I sing it now and I kind of feel like I'm in the same headspace as when I wrote it.
You mentioned a few minutes ago that it was nice to record the songs with your more mature voice. How has your voice changed over the years?
It's more in my chest. And after I performed with Joan, I went to get voice lessons with this amazing voice teacher named Justina Golden up in Northampton. And she just opened me up. I mean, the first day she said, you know, we're going to try to get into as much of your body as we can. So, and what might happen is that if you had any kind of trauma, it might come up because we're going to, you know, get into your organs. And she really did. I mean, it's some of it's metaphor, but I think some of it's actual. You know, in my imagination, I just imagine a very big space into which the air is going and coming out. So, you know, and also as you get older, it just gets deeper and your tone gets a little bit more, I don't know. I mean, I'm kind of, you know, hippy-dippy, so I think also the fact that I've lived a bit shows up in my voice as well.
Did it shake loose any trauma?
Good question. Nope.
Okay.
No, other things had shaken that stuff up, so I was, I was pretty cool on opening up those cavities by the time I got to voice lessons.
I wanted to ask you about one more thing before I let you go. You are playing your annual Christians, Pagans, and Other Hipsters holiday concert, which is in Brooklyn, which is, of course, a little bit out of our listening area, but it has such a cool concert name. I wanted to ask you, how long have you been doing that, and what happens at that show?
I started either in 2006 or 2007. I went to Brooklyn, and, you know, first of all, everyone in the audience looked like an ex-boyfriend. It was all these guys with dark rimmed glasses, and I was Nevin. And but it was also, it was after Christmas, and it was, everybody looked so relieved to be with each other and there, and not singing Christmas songs, or, you know, at least ironically commenting on Christmas songs. So it was kind of a giddy exhalation. And I thought, this is incredibly fun. So we did it the next year. I thought, well, maybe that was just a one-off, but it seems to be sort of this, that giddy spirit of the week after Christmas, that people want to kind of branch away from their extended families and into just a fun club. And it's just gotten better and better. Last year, some members of the, New York City Gay Men's Choir graciously showed up, and we sang Over the Rainbow together. It was just, people just receive whatever you are offering. And it's this year, my friend Jonathan Brook is going to come and sprinkle some fairy dust. So I'm really grateful to her, too.
Dar Williams, it's always awesome to speak with you. Have a wonderful holiday season and post-holiday season relief.
Thank you so much.
Dar Williams brings the Honesty Room to the Calvin in Northampton, Massachusetts on Saturday, December 13th at 8 p.m. Jill Sobule will open the show. For more information, visit IHEG.com or DarWilliams.com. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.
I won't forget when Peter Pan came to my house, took my hand. I said I was a boy, I'm glad he didn't check. I learned to fly, I learned to fight. I lived a whole life in one night. We saved each other's lives out on the pirate deck. And I remember that night when I'm leaving a late night with some friends, and I hear somebody tell me it's not safe. Someone should help me. I need to find a nice man to walk me home. When I was a boy, I scared the pants off of my mom, climbed what I could climb up. And I don't know how I survived. I guess I knew the tricks that all boys knew.